just get out there and start making offers. You're going to be afraid. That's fine. But just make offers. And once you start making offers and hopefully getting them accepted, hopefully that's enough to get your fear. You're maybe still going to be afraid, but just continue to move forward. And if you've bought stuff in-state, it's really no different than buying out-of-state, except it's a different state. I mean, it's not that – there's not that much difference. You jump on a plane instead of in a car.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me today, as always on Wednesdays, is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Todd. It's a good day to be alive again. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic. Beautiful day, and we're ready to roll. So, John, what do you got going on new this week? Anything new? Anything that any mistakes you made that you have maybe learned from or want to talk to us about?
Hey, you didn't warn me about that question.
Well, hey, we got to talk about what we do wrong sometimes, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess lately I've been doing a renovation on one of my rental units, and I've been doing some of the work myself. And I know that if you talk to, if you listen to all these podcasts about from entrepreneurs, you know, don't do the work yourself, hire it out, use your time better for more productive things. So potentially that's maybe, taking me longer than it should, taking my attention away from other things I could and should be doing. But
so John, you're doing renovations on, is it a vacant unit?
Yeah.
So when did it become vacant?
I don't want to go into this.
When did it become vacant?
It became vacant early April.
Early April. And it's late May. When do you think you'll be done?
I got to get it done.
No, not when you got to get it done. When will you be done?
I'm going to get it done early June.
So when do you think you'd be able to get a tenant in there? July 1st?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you rent each unit? What do you rent that unit for? What's your max rent that you're going to get?
It's a little unclear. What it was renting for was $1,050. With all the renovations that I'm doing, I'm fairly certain I'm going to get at least $1,500, but I'm going to go for $1,800 and see what happens.
So So you're missing out on April, May, and June rent. Now, likely, you wouldn't have been able to rent it for April regardless, whether you hired somebody or not.
Yeah.
So that's 2 months of rent. So that's $3,000. Now, what do these tenants pay some utilities?
They pay their own gas and electric.
So let's just call that another, you've maybe spent another 150 total on that.
Probably not, but yeah, you can say that.
Okay. $100.
Yeah.
So you've lost out on $3,100. Could you have hired this work out for around $3,100?
I think the labor for everything I'm doing was going to be about maybe $6,000.
So labor was $6,000. So basically you're doing this labor and paying yourself $2,900. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
$2,900. And I'm not saying you're right or wrong by doing what you're doing. I'm just saying that's what I would look at is to say, is it worth me doing? It would cost me $6,000 to hire it. I could make $3,100 in extra rents because they could get it done in a month. Mm-hmm. And I could rent it. So I'm losing out on $3,100, but I'm also saving $2,900. So basically, with me doing the work, I'm doing all this work for $2,900. So I'm worth half the price of my contractor. Now, I don't want to tell you you're right or wrong.
Yeah.
But that's what I see. And that, and I, John, and I don't mean to just pick on you because I do this a lot. Mm-hmm. The exact same thing as what you do. And I especially used to do this a lot, and I still do. But that's a valuable thing to talk about with all the listeners. We always talk about, you know, you need to delegate. And I was actually just talking about this yesterday and a few times now is we have to figure out what we're good at and become really, really good at that. And then we have to take what we're not good at and give it away to other people. Now, there's some value in what you're doing because you're learning it, you're experiencing it. And now, hopefully, in the future, when you do hire it out, you can say, well, look, you're going to charge me, you know, $7,000 for this job. I know, you know, I can do it in this time. This is what it's going to take you. I know that for $6,000, you'd still be making a pretty good amount of income. And you can tell, so you can negotiate, you know what's going on, you know how to talk to a contractor. So, I mean, there's some good in it. But there's also some, John, could you have, with this, you made $2,900. If you spent that same amount of time that you've spent fixing this place up, if you spent that working on your real estate business, could you have gotten one listing? You know, could you have helped one buyer out to find a house in that same amount of time? Could you have done that?
Yep.
Likely the answer is probably, you know, and maybe it's not, I don't know, but likely the answer is that. And that's what you got to think about sometimes is look, yeah, I can save a lot of money, which is nice. It's really nice not to, cause I don't have that money. Maybe I do have it, but it would hurt to spend it. Or whatever the reasoning is, or you just go, hey, I'm just a cheap person, which that's me. I'm just a cheap person. Like it's hard for me to go, you're going to side my house for $15,000 and I know I can do it myself. I'm going to pay you 15 grand to do that, but I can do this myself. Like it pains me to pay. And I, quite frankly, I kind of enjoy it until I get sick of it and then wish I would have hired somebody, but you know, so I get that I'm super cheap and that's kind of, I do that a lot and that's part of my problem. But that's part of also growing as a business person is learning how to delegate and what to delegate. So I think that's a great thing that you brought up. So I appreciate you opening up to it, even though you might not have wanted to, I appreciate you opening up about that. So,
yeah, no, I'm thinking about putting a video out on my own channel just to go into what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And you know, I do enjoy the work. I do enjoy kind of learning new things and looking back and saying, I did that, you know. Yeah. And yes, it's the same thing, you know, to pay somebody else to do something that I know I could do, you know, just using my time, whatever. It's difficult, but I understand the concept that at some point I need to use my time in different ways. So
right.
I did say no to fixing my car.
Good.
I was fairly certain I knew what was wrong, just changing the ignition coil. And my wife's like, couldn't you just do that? It's like, yes, I could, but I don't have time.
I have mostly stopped touching my car because every time I think I'm going to do it and save like money and time,
right,
it takes me three times longer to do it. The only time I will do it myself is if I know like 100% certainty that it will take me less time to drive to the mechanic and wait for the mechanic than it will for me just to go grab a part and do it myself. Like I had a switch in my brake pedal switch. That was causing some issues with my truck. And so that was a super easy thing to go to, you know, O'Reilly's, grab the part and basically pop the other part out and put this one in. It took me all of, you know, 2 minutes to actually do the part. It took me longer to get to the store and back.
Right.
And the store was right off the freeway, so it wasn't that long, but it would have taken me longer to go to the mechanic, and it would have probably cost me, you know, they would have probably charged me a couple hundred bucks and the part, right, like $15.
Right.
So there's sometimes I'll do it, but most of the time I won't touch my car because I'm just not that good at it.
That's one way knowledge can be dangerous. If you know how to do something, but you really shouldn't do it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, for me, one thing I've been struggling with, and this has been a struggle now for quite some time, and I'm still struggling with it and try to get my brain away from it, but I used to do a lot of real estate deals. I was flipping houses. I was buying rental properties. So I was doing, you know, at one point in time, I was doing like, you know, 50 transactions plus in a year. And now I'm down to doing just a couple. And there's months that go by between transactions. And that's really hard for my brain. And it's hard for me because I'm so used to that deal flow. You know, it's constantly coming in. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not trying to get a deal. And it's still, I'm trying to get deals, but it's different. I'm analyzing deals that I get sent or that come to me and I go, it doesn't work. I'm not even going to make an offer on it. And sometimes I make offers and that's always exciting. But we used to put on offers. I mean, I'm talking multiple offers every single day. At any point in time, during the height of my purchasing, I would probably have, you know, 15 offers in at one time on different properties. And you say, well, geez, could you have bought them all? Yeah, we could have bought them all. We would have. Now, at any one time, I usually don't have more than one if I do have one. So it's just a different kind of, like, that shift is hard for me. And it's just been challenging to go, geez, am I doing anything? So I had a conversation with my mentor about that yesterday, and basically, you know, he said that he kind of called me down from it. And every time I think about it, it's just like, I want to be doing deals, you know, want to be doing deals, but there's just the market's what it is right now. And you just can't, right, do a deal every single day. And the types of deals I'm doing, you can't be doing every day either. I can't be buying a 200 unit apartment building every day. Or, you know, I can't be buying 50 a year. It's just not going to happen.
So. Right. Yeah. Part of that is the market has done a huge shift from what it was a few years ago.
Yeah, when you absolutely
were doing that much.
Yep.
So, yeah. But I can imagine that, although it's taking some time to get used to it, isn't it a lot less pressure and stress to be thinking about fewer deals?
Yeah. So it's a different kind of stress, right? Because right now the stress is I need a deal. I want a deal. And I still maintain my conservative mindset. So it's not like I'm going out. I could buy deals. I could get deals all day long. But it's just, in my mind, I'd be overpaying for them. Because I still have my same, you know, I haven't changed my modeling. I haven't changed my minimums. I haven't changed anything about what I look at a property for. So the deals are just that much harder to get because I haven't adjusted to the market, and I don't think I ever will. Like I believe in my process and where I need to buy properties at. So it's just, you know, it's a different kind of, the stress now is not how am I going to get all these deals done and effective and efficient and get them financed and all that kind of stuff. My stress now is, when's that next deal? Where is it? You know, can I get it? That's the type of stress now, is I still want my business to grow. And where do I get the next deal? So it's a different kind of stress.
Sure.
So, plus I don't like not like I'm the kind of person that just wants to be going constantly. So,
sure.
If I'm not doing deals, then I feel like I'm lazy.
Well, maybe you are. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, maybe I am. I don't know. Well, so John, I wanted to talk, wrap up this out-of-state investing. We've done two episodes on it. I kind of wanted to, I have a little bit more I want to say about it. So I wanted to just wrap this up, with the out-of-state. And so we'll give a little, I think, overview of what we've already talked about, and then you know, talk about just a few things on the out of state. So
yeah, definitely. So if you're new to the show or haven't tuned in for a while, be sure to check out the last two episodes of Hump Day Hustle. They're released normally on Wednesdays, and that's where we've been discussing out of state investing. So our first episode on this series, we talked about choosing a market, and we talked about looking at growth in different areas, population growth, job growth, economic growth, and government planning. Is there a plan for the area? What is the path of progress? So we talked about also the prep work in our second show. What do you need to do once you've chosen a market in order to get to the next step of finding a deal? So you can get, yeah, Todd, any other comments about that? Or?
Well, yeah. So along with the job growth and all that kind of stuff, one of the most important things to me is affordability. I think that's really important, especially as we heat up in this market and continue to push rents and squeeze people. I think you need to find, whether it's a market or a sub-market, it doesn't matter where it is, but to something you need to find affordable places for people to live in. And if you can't find that, I think that's very challenging. So my rule is about that 30% of their income goes to rent. Now, again, that varies per market. We talked about that the last time. If you're investing in New York or San Francisco, you know, forget 30%, because that's not even during a downturn when rent is quote unquote extremely affordable, they're paying more than 30%. So you've got to also look at the type of market you're in and where the typical is, but you want to make sure that, you know, it's affordable for tenants. And if it's not, and they're being really squeezed and pushed, how much higher can you go before it breaks? You know,
definitely really good points. And so if you are listening, you know, be sure to go back and check out those other two episodes.
Yeah. So I just looked it up. It's episode 63 and episode 65. And so this one will be 67. So just a couple back.
Very good. Yeah. So now that we've gotten to that point where we've chosen the market, we've gone and done our research of the market, how do we, you know, really execute on this plan of out-of-state investing?
Yep. So and when we last left off, the last thing I said is go visit the market. So again, go visit the market, meet the people you've been talking to on the phone and emailing with, and building those relationships, actually physically meet them, get a good connection. And I think it's important to meet with them and then come back to, you know, your home, your office, and again, thank them for meeting with you, email them. And now potentially you'll start to see some more deals, some different types of deals. And not always, you know, brokers sometimes just hold back and they're not going to give you great deals. Or, and some brokers, quite frankly, some brokers, and this is a market, you know, I talked to a broker in Indianapolis and they're a big brokerage and they don't have off-market deals. They don't do off-market deals, or very rarely, I should say. And the reason why is right now they're pushing all of their sellers to do an open marketing because they know they can get more money if they do open marketing. So that's that brokerage. They're just not going to have a lot of deals that are going to be off market, but doesn't mean they're bad deals. It just means that's what you're going to deal with. So you build those relationships, you thank them for meeting with you, all that kind of stuff. And then you continue those relationships through the computer, through the phone, and hopefully start getting some deals that come in. Now, I would say don't wait too long to go back into that market to meet again and maybe this time actually look at deals. I wouldn't wait for, you know, 6 months or wait till you actually get a deal under contract. I would get back there within, you know, within a few months. If you're very serious about that market, I would get back in a few months and make sure, because it's only going to strengthen who they what they think of you. So I think that's a really big key to executing, is making sure you're consistency. I mean, consistency is key for everything, but consistently, you know, talk with them and email them and go visit the market.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we as humans, we deal with what's in front of us. And so if the brokers on the ground are not seeing you on a regular basis or hearing from you on a regular basis, they're going to forget about you and, you know, deal with the clients that are in front of them looking to transact.
Look, off-market deals, which everybody wants, right? You want an off-market deal. Off-market deals are only given to people that the broker thinks are going to execute on it and are hungry. On-market deals, the deals that the broker, when the broker mass emails everybody, yeah, sure, you'll get that if you're on their mass email distribution list, right? But if you want the true off-market deal that's only been maybe shown to 5, 10, you know, people, you're going to have that relationship. You're going to have to be somebody who's, you know, not an annoyance to that broker, but in their ear, so they know that you're serious. If you want to have that opportunity for that true off, quote unquote, off market deal, and there's not a lot of really off market deals. Once a broker has it, to me, it's really on market. People call it off market, but it's on market. Now there are times I've had like the first deal I got in Lexington, and even the second deal, neither of those were on market. The broker was the one that found those on my behalf. I the very first one, I said, hey, look, we looked at one property, and I've said this on the podcast before, but we looked at one property that was going to be listed, and I liked it. And that property a month or so later popped up on the market, and I put an offer in it, but it was only, I think, a 48 unit, 46 unit, something like that. And I said to the broker, I said, look, I want to buy this property, but I don't want to buy just this property. I want some scale. So if you can find me a property within, you know, a short distance of this walking distance, then I can couple those two together and I'll have a big enough property. So find me something that's that size or bigger. And that's exactly what they did. It wasn't on the market at all. They called a few properties close by to see if the people wanted to sell, and one of them did. That's how I found the second one as well. So you can truly find off market deals, but you're not going to find that if you don't have relationships with these brokers.
Right.
So, or relationships with somebody, I should say, brokers, property owners, property managers, appraisers, inspectors, whatever it is. You're not going to find bankers. You're not going to find deals if you're not talking to people.
So the other good thing that you mentioned is just getting physically getting back to the city again in a short amount of time. That's going to keep you in the right mindset as well.
Yeah, true.
To just say, you know, this is something I'm doing. It's not just like I went on a vacation. It's not something, you know, so many people go to, you know, real estate conferences and then they learn a ton through the, you know, it's the fire hose. You get all this information, then you go back and you forget about it till next year when you get the conference invite again.
But, and meeting people, they do the same thing. Like the last conference I was at, I met so many great people and I've stayed in contact with a lot of them. Like I've been on a few of their podcasts. I've had them on podcasts. I've got a mastermind group with, you know, three people that I met on the last conference I was at. So I stay in contact with these people. That's really important. I mean, you meet some great people. Why just let that go to the wayside and maybe either never see them again or see them at the next conference and you go, hey, I remember you. You know, that does you no good.
Yeah. Well, cool. Now, as you're moving forward in this process, how do you prevent yourself from being taken advantage of by, you know, a dishonest contractor, dishonest property manager or anything like that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of that comes down to that prep work that you did, first of all. So making sure that the right people are in place. Now, that's easier said than done, right? Because we only know people for as much as what, you know, they talk, and a lot of people can talk and a lot of people can tell you stories and a lot of people can lie and you can ask for references. But, you know, if I'm going to ask you, John, for a reference and you're a dishonest person, are you going to give me good references or bad references? You're going to give me good references, right? You know, a couple people that either know you or will lie for you. Dishonest people know dishonest people. So it's, you know, it's easy to find some good references, but I would try to cross-reference those references as much as you can. I would try to find other references that they don't even refer. So you can, you know, property manager, for instance, they'll give you three or four referrals. Great. But why don't you go onto apartments.com or another website or figure out, you know, where some of those properties are that they manage. Maybe that management company manages, you know, 5,000 units. Well, if they do, find some of those units, find the owners, find the, you know, go secret shop the properties, whatever it takes, and use them as your reference. Versus just trusting the ones that they gave you. Same thing with contractors. You know, that might be a little harder because you can't secret shop that, but find out a handful of apartments that they've done and call the owners. That can be helpful as well. So, you know, the other thing is building. There's several different things that you can do. You can also, and this comes with scale. It's hard to do without that. But you can have somebody that's in that city that works for you that is totally different than the property management company or the contractors. And the contractors and property managers, if you're talking about both of those together, they can kind of keep an eye on one another as well. You can utilize that as well. The other thing is to have a broker. That your real estate broker brought you a deal, right? And they're in that town. They, if they're willing to, not everyone will, but if they're willing to put some money, maybe their commission or part of their commission into the deal, so they have some skin in the game. And then saying, hey, look, your boots on the ground and really need somebody that's boots on the ground. I'd love you to do this, this, and this. And maybe you have them come go to the property every, you know, few weeks and whatever. You know, I'll give you a little cut of the general partnership as well. So that's a possibility too, is to give them some incentive to, not only do they have an investment in your property, but now they have some general partnership. So they feel they had obligation to protect their investment and an obligation to do something because they're part of the general partnership. So that's another great thing to do, is to have property management company, have the real estate broker, you know, have somebody that's local, maybe even a local person that's an investor, but part of the team.
Yep.
The last thing I'll say is you need to audit the books. You need to make sure property management, they can easily add some extra charges, you know, a general admin charge. Well, what is general admin? What do you mean you got a general charge? What's a general charge supposed to mean? So being curious about that, and constant communication. Are you having a weekly call with, you know, the property management company? Are you continually talking with them and communicating? Are you talking with the contractor? Or are you just kind of hoping everything goes well? Because if you're just hoping things go well, I got news for you. Likely things won't go well. But if you're actually being active, there's a lot better chance.
Yep. One point about working with contractors, it's always a good idea to get a copy of their insurance and a check to make sure their business is registered in the state. You know, I got a quote from a contractor recently for one of my clients, and he was new to the state, but he said he was getting his ducks in a row and whatever. But he did provide me with his insurance, and I emailed, contacted the insurance company, and said, "Is this policy still in effect?" And it took actually a while to hear back, but eventually they did reply and say, "No, this policy is not in effect." And at that point, things were looking a little weird otherwise, so we had already said no to this contractor. But, you know, that's one way you can kind of cross-reference a contractor.
Yep. And contractors that I work with have to name my company on the policy as well. So I have to be named as additionally insured. And then they also will notify me if the insurance has been canceled for any reason whatsoever. My assistant will notify. So we're additionally insured. We verify that all the paperwork, all the workers' comp, all that kind of stuff is in effect.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah,
definitely.
So, you know, after we've learned all of these different steps and aspects to consider, I imagine some people will kind of maybe be paralyzed by all of the things to do, or maybe just fear of the unknown. What would you say to that person? How do they kind of get up the courage to move forward with this?
It's easy to get that mental brain freeze, right? That just, you've researched it. You know that you should go forward, but yet you don't. You're that fear. So, you know, that's a challenge for sure. How do you get over that fear? How do you decide that, you know, that it's time to move forward? I think that's something you got to do. You got to do on your own. You eventually have to get over it. You know, reading and educating yourself and making sure, your ducks are in a row is a great thing. But actually just get out there and start making offers. You're going to be afraid. That's fine. But just make offers. And once you start making offers and hopefully getting them accepted, hopefully that's enough to get your fear. You're maybe still going to be afraid, but just continue to move forward. And if you've bought stuff in-state, it's really no different than buying out-of-state, except it's a different state. I mean, there's not that much difference. You jump on a plane instead of in a car. And you know, you have other people looking over the property. So, I mean, there's maybe some differences, but it's really not that much more difficult. I would say just get out there and you got to start taking action. I mean, there's no sense of doing anything in life if you're not going to take action.
I think another thing I would add to that, and I'm kind of learning this more and more, as an entrepreneur, or having that mindset where we like to do our own thing, mm-hmm. We like to build our own business, it can be hard to seek out and find a mentor or to become a part of somebody else's empire first before building your own. But I think we need to consider that as one option. You know, partnering up with somebody else who's already been successful and learning from them.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and everybody can do it their own way, but I think that can be a very fantastic way. We see that as some people see that as like a downfall, as a weakness. Like, you know, I don't want to become part of somebody else's organization, but it's not that you're committing to that for the rest of your life. And maybe you will end up committing to it for the rest of your life, but that's only, of course, if you want to. But being a part of somebody else's organization or, you know, working with them and learning with them, it can only fast forward your journey, you know? So I think it's a positive thing. I actually wish I would have been more like that as well when I was first, you know, starting it. You can still do your own thing too. Like I could have still done almost everything I did, but if I would have been part of some of these bigger companies that were purchasing apartment buildings, I think I would have been a lot farther ahead of where I am right now. And there would have been, you know, good learning opportunity and definitely good money to be made too. So yeah, I think you make a good point there.
I think there's nothing like nothing that can boost your confidence like having done it before.
And you're seeing what a successful company does, and you can see what they do right, and you can see what they do wrong. And a lot of times you can see the missed opportunity within that too. And that you can, maybe you can even figure out what that niche is that a lot of these companies are missing, and you can carve that out for yourself.
Yeah.
So
another question would be for the listeners who, you know, if they learned all about this and but they've decided that they don't have enough time or money to invest out of state.
Yep.
Because of the extra travel, extra work that we've discussed here. What would you say to that person?
I would tell them to go through the exercises. Because if you go through all the exercises that I talked about, you're going to learn how to analyze and look at any market anywhere in the country. And that includes your own backyard. I would say invest in your own backyard if it's a good market, if everything is equal between market A and your own backyard. I pick my own backyard. If everything is equal, I pick my own backyard. But the problem with your own backyard with a lot of people is they don't see it from the outside eyes that you should be looking at it from. You know certain things about your market, and you know what everybody else says, the chatter, and you've driven through areas, but you don't see all the changes. You don't necessarily study what the government's doing. You don't look at a lot of the statistics that you should be looking at. And so I think you need to go through the process. You need to go through the steps. And I think it's easy to go through the steps by choosing a totally different market that you have nothing to do with, that you've never dealt with, and do that whole process from start to finish. Get to know it. Now, do you have to go out and fly there? Okay, no, right? If you're not going to invest there, you don't have the money to do it. Okay, don't fly out there. But do all the other research. And then do it on your own market. And now you can start talking to the brokers and all that kind of stuff. But I think you need to do the research, because I think it's really, really valuable.
Yeah, if you're in your own backyard, you might be taking things for granted. Just because you've been there all this time and know it, you think you know it, but you know, there might be things that you're overlooking.
I think it's astonishing how much you miss with your own backyard, just because you think you do know it. So I think going from the outside and looking in is going to be a lot of value if you can really study your own market. I just think a lot of people look at their market with different eyes than what the market really is. So, yeah. So that's what I was like, go into it. I get it. You might not be there. It's not even a desire for you to do, or you just, like you said, you don't have the money, you don't have the time, you, whatever, you got kids, whatever it is. But I think you need to figure out how to do that type of research and do it on your own market as well.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think that's about it. We covered quite a bit. So.
Yeah. Sounds good. Again, to the listeners and viewers out there, if you have any further questions on this topic, this is probably going to be the last episode on the Out of State Investing for now. But if we miss something that you have a burning question about, you know, be sure to put that comment on the YouTube video or on our Facebook page, and Todd will get back to you on that. And while you're at it, be sure to give us a 5-star rating, give us a thumbs up, and share it out with your friends.
Yeah, and subscribe. We need some more subscribers, and we need some more people to share us.
Yeah,
share this show out. So
yeah, maybe it's a good time to mention that our goal for this month of May was to get to 8,000 listens for the month. I think that's what we discussed, right?
Yeah, I think so. I want to get to 10,000.
Well,
shortchanging us. Let's do
it. Listen once, listen twice, and share it with your friends.
Share it. If everybody that's listening shares this thing to a couple people or on their Facebook page or whatever, that would be huge. That would be awesome. So if you get value out of this, I would challenge everybody just to take this episode, grab the link and share it on your, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram, Twitter, whatever you're mostly on, and share it out. That would be huge for our show, and we would really appreciate it. And hopefully whoever you share it with or everybody you share it with, some people that listen to it will get some value out of it too.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, thanks, John. You have a great rest of the day, man. Make every day a Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity and properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.